and face coverings. With the Rave Maria Radio News, I'm Dan McGraw.
As anyone who has been paying any attention to the news can attest, this last week has been filled with protests, agony, violence, a lot of political real chaos, it seems, at times in the country. For Catholics, this has also been a difficult time, as churches in six states have been damaged by the violent protests. And as we're hearing, there is a lot of polarization politically and elsewhere. The question now is, where do we go from here? How do we deal with this as a country? How can we as Catholics respond? And to answer some of those questions, I'm delighted to be joined now by Deacon Harold Burke Sivers. For those who may not be familiar with him, he is known worldwide as the Dynamic Deacon. He's one of the most sought-after speakers in the church today. He's also one of the hosts of Morning Glory on EWTN Radio. So, Deacon, welcome.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to be with you, Matthew. I still have wonderful memories of our last time we saw each other. We had dinner in Washington, D.C. I had a wonderful time. It's great to be with you again.
Same here. I wish fervently that we were talking under much happier circumstances.
No, agreed.
For you, though, as an African-American Catholic, what has the last week been like?
Well, yeah, it's been hard, and plus I was in law enforcement as well. So let me just say a couple of things. First of all, from 2002 to 2008, I was in a governor-appointed position here in the state of Oregon on the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. That's the organization that is responsible for the training of all police officers, firemen, corrections officers, parole, and probation. And I was chair of the board my last year, and I tell you, after 23 years in serving in public safety, I can tell you that police officers are not trained in the technique of putting your knee on someone's neck, especially after the person has been secured. Now, I myself have fought with people. I myself have had to take people to the ground and to wrestle with them to get them secured. And I have put my knees on people's backs and things like that in order, again, the whole purpose is to get the person who's fighting you to get them secured. And once that's done, it's done. You put them in the car and you're done. So this is what enrages me about the George Floyd incident. He was on the ground. He wasn't resisting, and they put his knee on his neck. For what? I mean, no police officer is trained in that kind of technique whatsoever. So from that perspective, I was outraged. Obviously, as a black man, I was outraged. I'm not technically African American. I was born in Barbados, so I'm technically Caribbean American. So that's why. but still, I know I'm just kidding you, Matt. But the thing is, I was outraged because I myself have been pulled over while driving while black. That whole thing, and been subject to prejudice and racism, and things like that. So it's just it's enraging. It's enraging, and so I can see why there's such a national anger about this issue. And what's really disturbing about this is not just an officer involved shooting, right? Where there was a judgment call, whether to shoot or don't shoot. Clearly this was completely different, and it was captured all on video. So there's no question or doubt that Mr. Floyd was killed. There's no question or doubt about that. And so I could see the reason for the protests and for the anger, but I don't see the point of the rioting and the looting and the vandalism. That does nothing. And let me explain why. People have been throwing around the term racism. So we have to define our terms. What do we mean by racism? Now, prejudice is a preconceived notion or opinion that's not based on actual reason or experience. So, for example, Matthew, I grew up in Newark, New Jersey.
Deacon?
Yes. Yep, I'm here.
I think we lost you there for a second.
Oh, okay, yep. So we have to define our terms prejudice and racism, right? So prejudice is a preconceived opinion that's not based on fact or reason or actual experience. So I grew up near Newark, New Jersey. So if someone said, oh, you're from Newark, you must have grown up poor. Now, this person may have never been to Newark. They don't know anything about it. But yet they're saying, oh, well, I just have this thing in my head. People from Newark are poor. So that's prejudice. And that leads to stereotyping. So what that does, you extrapolate prejudice. Now you apply it to more people. Well, if you're from Newark, you must be this, you must be that. Instead of look at the individual, you make a collective decision about that person's experience. Now, racism includes prejudice. The added thing about racism is that you believe that your own race is superior to another person's race. So now your prejudice is elevated because now you have the added piece of thinking my race is superior. That's where we get the understanding of racism from. And what you're seeing with the protests are the anger and the frustration of not just the police, but this whole undercurrent within our culture and this tension with regard to race and race relations, and the violence, particularly against African Americans and mm-hmm. and things like that. But I think this really speaks to a bigger undercurrent of this unresolved issue of race that's permeated the very fabric of our culture.
So the question now becomes, where do we go from here? How do we solve these clear problems that we have as a country, but also in this particular moment? I mean, we have we had at one point the lowest unemployment, I believe, for African Americans. What is that number now? I think it's, 50%? In the wake of COVID, we've got a lot of people who have been cooped up now for months. There is a great deal of discontent in the country. What do we offer as a church at this moment?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I'm going to talk about this I have a webinar tomorrow, which I'm going to do at 11 a.m. Pacific time. I'm going to talk about this for about an hour, this whole issue and specifically how we respond as Catholics. But I'll say this for now. In the book of Genesis, chapter 1, verses 26 and 27, it says, God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness. So we're made in the image and likeness of God. And so what we have to do is take those words, selem and demuth. Those are the words in Hebrew for image and likeness. So selem, the word for image, is a masculine noun, and it means a shadow that's the outline or representation of the original. So to put that into the proper context then, if I'm standing in the light, I'm casting a shadow. The shadow's not me. The shadow's just an outline, a representation of me, but yet if I move my arm, the shadow, moves the arm. If I move my leg, the shadow moves as well. So what does that mean spiritually? Are we God? No. 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 4 says we are partakers in the divine nature. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 19, Paul says our bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit. Genesis 2 says that God breathed into our nostrils the breath of life. We're not God, but we have, in a sense, God's shadow, God's outline, God's imprint, if you will, onto our souls. So what does that mean? So when we speak, we're a reflection of God speaking. When we love as human beings, we're reflecting the love of God. Right, just like a shadow reflects what we do, we reflect the love of God in ourselves. And the word demuth, likeness, is a feminine noun which means similar. So similar in a sense, like if someone created a statue of me and on one put that on one side and my son on the other side, you would say they're both in my likeness because they both look like me. In fact, the statue looks more like me than my son. But unlike the statue, my son and I share what? We have in common essence, a nature, a being, a usia, right? My stuff is in my son. So even though the statue looks more like me, my son is much more in my likeness. That's the way we need to start seeing people, in the image and likeness of God. That's where we have to start. And who did that so beautifully were two people that come to mind immediately, St. Teresa of Calcutta and the Venerable Augustus Tolton.
Yes.
Now, Mother Teresa says that she looked at the poor, and when she looked at someone who was dying from leprosy, who was suffering, she saw Jesus. She didn't look at what color, what race, what nation. She saw Jesus living in that person. And Father Augustus Tolton, who put up with tremendous discrimination and prejudice in his time, the way he responded out of love, the way he responded out of trying to open dialogue to understanding, the witness and the example he gave, I think is a perfect way of showing how we respond to our situation now, at least to plant the seeds to have true lasting change. We have to see God in the other person standing in front of us.
So in terms of the average Catholic right now, as I said, we're very polarized. A lot of people are angry. A lot of people are confused. What is the first step that you recommend they take?
Well, for us as Catholics, well, obviously we have to pray, right?
Right.
but it's not just like, oh, I'm just going to say a prayer and throw it here. No, we have to pray from the depths of our hearts. And I would recommend prayer, obviously, before the Blessed Sacrament of the Eucharist and through the intercession of the Blessed Mother. I think those are two very powerful ways to express our desire before God to find real and true healing, especially with the Blessed Mother. And I say that because John Paul II says in Mulieris Dignitatem, and it's a beautiful document on the...
Oh, I think we lost you again. Deacon? Okay. Well, I can pick up on a few things that Deacon Harold was trying to impart to us. I think, as he stresses, we really do need to turn to the teachings of the Church at this particular moment, where all of us are in need of the Catechism, but we're also obviously in need of the reality of seeing in others the dignity of the human person made in the image and likeness of God. And in that sense, too, I think Pope John Paul II was a very powerful teacher in that. I encourage everyone to read Evangelium Vitae and Veritatis Splendor. When we come back, I'm going to talk with Mike Aquilina about the wisdom of the Church. Justin Martyr, great apologist, here on Cresta in the Afternoon. Don't go anywhere.